Right? Test, 1, 2. Okay. Hi, everybody. I told you once, my name's Paul. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Paul.
That qualifies me to be here. And also the fact, I think, that I've lived in Bozeman for 2 years. I'm one of the transient people that stay for a while, go to school, and move on. Enjoyed my time here. I recognize a lot of faces. Then there's, of course, people I know that have moved on as myself and keep track with some folks. But what I'd like to do tonight is, I spoke once before at this meeting, and it was just over a year sobriety, and I had a lot more answers than I do now. I knew a lot more about this deal and what I wanted to say. So things get a little bit muddy for me when I get up here. I'm thinking, yeah, well, you know, should I be working out of the big book? You know, should I just read out of there and find some stuff to follow along? Should I tell my experience with the steps one at a time? And I don't allow myself to prepare for any kind of meetings. When I'm at a discussion meeting, I try not to can my talk even as it's going around the table. I want to wait until it comes to me and then ask God to let me be honest and try and share what's real with me. And I try and bring it into today if I can. And that's really tough for me. For some reason, I'm good at talking about what I was like even 6 months ago, years ago. It's a lot easier for me to do that than to tell you what happened today, what's going on in my life right now. But I'll try and do some of that. But I want to back up, and I want to qualify myself and give you a little background on how I got into this deal in the first place. And then I'd like to share, I hope I have some time to share what the adventure of life has brought me in sobriety. I've done some moving around. I got to spend a year in Europe in an exchange program through the college, and I got to find out about sobriety in a foreign country. You know, so hopefully, I'm not going to talk too long. I used to be able to go on for 45 minutes at a first step meeting in this little group in Columbus, Montana, and you know, God love them, the people in that group, they tolerated me and they loved me, and I try not to do that anymore. But this is my one chance to just sort of lay it out here. And Randy, good to see people show up for their first time at these meetings. Still, I know that that the treatment centers have done their thing, and the courts have jammed a lot of people in here, and a lot of people are being exposed to the message of Alcoholics Anonymous today. I try and be as open-minded as I can. It doesn't seem to be as easy as it was in the beginning. When I first got here, I was court-ordered. I had to spend 6 months worth of weekly meetings with this little bunch in Columbus. I knew it was going to be a bunch of old guys sitting around bitching about life and complaining because things weren't right, and they wanted to drink, how bad they wanted to drink. And I had this image of Alcoholics Anonymous as being this support system where if I wanted it bad enough, I'd have to call somebody on the phone and they'd talk me out of drinking. That was my impression. And when I got to my first meeting, I found out that it was people my own age, people I used to party and drink with. And they were hanging on for dear life. They had decided to make some changes in their life. And I sat in my first meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous with my arms folded and, I'm Paul. Hi, I'm Paul. After a year and a half of showing up when I hadn't used that day, I allowed myself to go to a meeting because I thought it had something to do with me not drinking. Also the fact that the wonderful people in the court system, the justice system, decided that I had to sign this 6-month contract that I wouldn't drink or use drugs under penalty of the rest of the DUI sentence, which was, I don't know, hundreds of dollars in fines, 29 more days in jail and all. And that scared me enough not to drink. I couldn't stay off the drugs, though. I found that 30 days white-knuckling it was the best I could do. I've told this story before, but I was going to outsmart them. See, and I was reaching for some kind of honesty at the point of looking at my problems and having this counselor to work with, and she asked me a few times after we signed this contract, "Well, are you drinking, Paul?" "No, no, I'm not. And I feel great. Gosh, you know, I don't have this chronic indigestion anymore. I don't fart all the time. I my head's clearing up. You know, and I feel good. This is great." Well, she was pleased, and we'd do some more little book work, you know, and you know, some tests or read or something like that. So about the third or fourth week, she asked me, you drinking yet, Paul? No, I'm not, and everything's going great. Well, you using any drugs? And I said, well, yeah, I'm still smoking pot. And she hit the roof, you know. And I couldn't understand why. I thought I was being pretty good. So she says, well, this just won't do, you know, and I'm just going to have to put you in treatment for 30 days. Nobody was going to put me in treatment. I had made plans to, you know, leave the state if that's what they were going to pull. But she threatened me with this, the rest of the DUI sentence, and said, okay, well, let's just go at it again. One more try, Paul. Only we're going to add something to this contract, and that will be your analysis on demand. If I ask you, you will have to prove that you're staying clean and sober. Okay, all right, I guess. If that's what, you know, game we got to play here. So that's when I did my 30 days. I'd done enough research that I knew that in 27 days, your system would be cleared, 27 exactly, your system would be cleared of any traces of marijuana. And so at the end of the 30 days, I saved some pee. I peed into a jar and I stuck it in the freezer, okay? This was my insurance policy, you know? It was like, well, if I just happen to go out and get high one night, well, at least I got this good sample if they ask me for something. Just take it out and defrost it, you know? So this was my great idea. And sure enough, yeah, I set myself up and I was using again. First it was just weekends, and then it was evenings, and then it was sometimes at lunch, and then it was first thing in the morning. Stoned all the time, and Coke and the better stuff, you know, a little speed if I could find it. But I wasn't drinking, okay? So I stayed with these meetings, man. I kept going. Something to do. I just figured there was something to do here. You guys were telling me something, or something about the steps, and just hearing the fifth, how it works every single time that I heard it, you know, something was sinking in. And I was taking little pieces of the program. I was working little amends here and there. I could do a little personal inventory now and then. But I wasn't working the deal. And like I said, these people in Columbus, God love them, they put up with me for a year and a half sitting there. And, you know, at first I was just Paul. And then I was Paul, I might be chemically dependent. And then I was Paul, yeah, I think I'm an addict. And then I was Paul, I might have a problem with alcohol too. And finally it was Paul, I'm alcoholic. At it, whatever, you know, and I tagged a lot of stuff on there when I was even ready to admit it. Now it's just, okay, you know, it's alcoholic's good enough. That covers a lot of stuff for me. Yeah. And, you know, I wonder if I always was an alcoholic or when this stuff started happening to me. Gosh, the first experiences with alcohol that made me feel great was like on the school bus. I used to have a problem fitting in. I was kind of geeky. I was sort of tall and had glasses and sort of brainy type, and I wanted to be in with all the cool guys and stuff. So I remember I had this big thick book and I hollowed out a bunch of pages on it, just big enough to fit this little miniature of vodka in there, okay? And this was like seventh grade, and I took this thing on the bus with me and I sneak it out, you know, and pass it around to my friends. Boy, that was cool. Gee, Paul, I didn't know you could hold your liquor. Yeah, you bet. Not getting high on it yet. I don't remember any effects from that, honestly. But I remember it made me fit in, and it was a status symbol. It was something cool guys were willing to accept me for. So, yeah, the first time I really got drunk, man, we did it right. A friend of mine and I decided to try everything in the liquor cabinet, put it in a big quart jar. And I mean everything. We took just all the hard liquor, and we put in a little vermouth, because you're supposed to do that, and mixed in some tomato juice, and then threw in a beer for good measure, okay? This stuff was strong. And we just went down in his basement and off in the corner, and we tried to drink this whole thing, and we couldn't quite get through it, and both of us were just stumbling, fall down drunk in about an hour. And I remember trying to get my bike home, and I kept the big old paper bike, and I just kept running into cars and sidewalks and curbs and stuff. I don't know how many times I fell down on the way home and puked and got home, and of course they knew that there was a little bit of a problem here and got in trouble and all. And yeah, got loaded. Boy, I just got loaded big time. And this was when I realized that, yeah, you could really get out of yourself. You could really feel different. Okay? Drugs were great. I used to craft a buzz. You know, I used to do just the right amount of speed, throw down a few beers, smoke a couple joints, maybe just half a hit of acid, you know. Work at stuff, experiment around with mixes of this and a little bit of that. But I remember the first time accepting alcohol as one of my drugs. Walking down the streets of Denver, Colorado with my buds, middle of the night, we're, you know, five abreast, walking across these rural streets. And I had to fall behind and throw up. And I remember wiping my mouth and hurrying to catch up with the guys and thinking to myself, well, this is one way to handle this drug, alcohol, is just to kind of lose it. But, you know, you can stay. And I guess alcohol is one of my drugs now. I remember thinking that to myself. That was clear thought, because I had accepted natural drugs like reefer and mescaline. And then, of course, I made some allowances for speed since that was so good, you know. Used to really experiment around and, like I said, craft the buzz. Found out that I couldn't handle certain stuff. Got a needle habit for a while. Scared me. Passed out with a needle in my arm one time and vaguely remember thinking to myself, look what you're doing. You know, you're killing yourself. Look what you're doing. And I somehow got rid of everything, the needles and everything. The paraphernalia was all gone the next day. I don't know what I did with it, but it was all gone. And I didn't have to look back and say, you know, like I'm an addict. See, as I move on through this story, I'm telling you that I was able to say, hey, I put needles behind me, guys. I can handle some reefer and my speed and some coke. And alcohol's no problem. You just got to put up with getting sick and going into blackouts once in a while. But I can handle it, see, because I'm not that bad. I'm not as bad as all these other guys I see. I'm not an alcoholic because I don't drink before noon. Won't do that. You know, alcoholics got to have a shot first thing in the morning to settle down the jitters. I know that. And they got to drink early in the morning. I won't drink before noon. I don't care what. And if I'm really hammered from the night before, if I'm still hungover and just feeling like shit, I can go all day without a drink. Maybe I'll eat a couple sopers or take some Valium or something. But I don't need a drink, you know. So I can't be an alcoholic. Got a little problem with drugs, you know. Going to have them around. I figured I'd be smoking dope and drinking beer the rest of my life. The good stuff when I can afford it. Maybe some scotch, maybe some coke. That's just the way my life was going to be. I was going to use. Just like some people were going to drive cars or wear fancy clothes. You know what I mean? It's like, this was my life. It was my hobby. It was a love affair. It was my coping mechanism. It was so much of who I was that I didn't see life any other way. Couldn't see life. I was incapable of doing it any other way. And that was fine. I was willing to pay that price because it worked fine. It worked just great. Started to get me in some trouble, I guess, in the blackouts, and got this DUI deal, and I had to start taking a look at my life. I was one of the lucky ones, though, because, gosh, see, this whole idea of change in my life today, and it really hasn't moved anywhere off of what went on 5 years ago, 6 years ago, when this was all happening. It's like the resistance to change can be overcome when certain things are present, like an answer, like a solution, okay, has to be there. I have to be disillusioned enough with what I'm doing now to take this answer and do some first things with it, right? I was sick and tired of getting stoned all the time when I didn't want to be, spending money when I didn't want to, getting drunk, getting in trouble, going through relationships, not feeling good about myself anymore. God, it used to work. I used to feel great no matter what happened. Now I started regretting things and it just wasn't fun anymore. So I had that disillusionment. You know, things weren't okay. Things weren't working for me. And like I said, I'm one of the lucky ones, as thick-headed as I am and as phony and intellectual and yeah, just thick-headed, as stubborn as I can be, I was able to see some of the answers here in this program when I was first pushed in. Maybe there was something you guys had that, you know, like I said, these people were just like me that were in this little group and they were working this deal to save their own butts and they were getting better. They were changing their lives and they seemed to be managing without using. I couldn't do that yet, but I hung around. After a year and a half of meetings, I found myself in a place where I couldn't go back out and drink anymore. Scared me that I might drink again. Scared me. Because it had been a year, it had been dry. And I didn't like what I saw anymore. I didn't fit in with the people in the bars because I didn't drink. And they got stupid. And I didn't get stupid with them anymore, so it just wasn't my place. And I was scared to go out and join them because I was afraid I'd drink again. So I wasn't out with that crowd. And I didn't fit in with you guys because I wasn't honest about this deal. And I wasn't working the steps. And I didn't have a sponsor. And I wasn't doing what you told me to do. So I was the first one out the door after the meetings were over. I'd sit in the meetings and I'd tell you just what I thought you needed to hear. And I'd interrupt people. I took more than my share of time to talk. And I was gone. I wouldn't hang out with you afterwards, wouldn't go to coffee, wouldn't call you up, because I was going to handle this on my own. I knew a whole lot more than you guys anyway. There were psychological principles at work here, more than this spiritual stuff you guys kept spouting. So I was isolating. I had my stereo and my TV and my animals and my fishing, my hobbies, my education. I was going to school. And I got lonelier and lonelier and lonelier, and I just, I got to a place where, well, I remember, I was gonna hit the ex-wife with some stuff in court, and thought I was gonna have to sue for custody, but it came down where it wasn't that bad, and I just needed to get some visitation worked out, because the lawyer screwed up the first time we did it, and I needed to rewrite the visitation stuff, and I was gonna up my child support, being a nice guy, and had to go to court, and I knew she was going to show up. I thought she was going to show up. And I thought, well, if I have to accuse her of using drugs, I can't be doing that. I got to clean up here a little bit. Now, I know about that 27 days. Boy, I just don't think I can do another 27 days, but I can do a week or so. I can probably make it for a week. So I got all my paraphernalia, everything in the house, put it in a paper sack, and took it over to a friend's house. I said, here, you got to keep this for me for a while, because if it's around, I'll use it, and I want to be clean. I want to be a week clean and sober when I go in to confront my wife with her problems. So the date comes around and she doesn't show up. And I do this court date. Turns out it was on a Tuesday. That's the regular meeting day in Columbus, Montana for the Stillwater Group. The court date was on a Monday. And I got through that day and it was like just nuts, you know, pulling my hair out, worrying about stuff, and things just got taken care of. And for some reason, I didn't go talk to my friend that evening. But the next morning, Tuesday morning, I got up. And that was all behind me now. The court thing was over. And I had to make a decision. I had to decide, am I going to go to my friend's house and get that stuff back? Or am I going to maybe try today, clean and sober, and go to this meeting? Because if I stayed clean and sober for one day, I allowed myself to go to a meeting. So, okay, I can do that. I can just go to this meeting today. And I won't go over to my friend's house. And I walked into that meeting, and I was going to have to tell them a few things, though, if I'm going to work this thing. There's a few people there who keep telling me to stop thinking so much. And I can't do that. I got to think, you know. They don't understand. And they were telling me that I had to do stuff that I don't want to do, and I'm going to have to let them know that I'll have to work this my way. And that melted. For some reason, it didn't take too long. One of the girls gave me a big hug and said, it's good to see you again, Paul. Didn't ask me any questions. Didn't quiz me if I was sober or still using. Just said, good to see you again, Paul. And I just realized, I mean, the love in this group was just enough to just melt my heart. And it did. It was a birthday night. And one of the guys that I had seen come in to the deal was a year's clean and sober. And he was one that was just, like, most of the time he was just white knuckles sitting there. Couldn't get a word out of him at meetings. But he started to break open, and in a year I could see some changes. And this guy was changing before my very eyes. He was making some progress, and I sure as hell hadn't. Or maybe I thought I did, but I honestly knew I didn't. And so it comes around to my turn to talk, and I said, yeah, Eric, you know, I've seen these changes, blah, 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 blah. And it's kind of a birthday for me, too, because, you see, I've gone 7 days clean and sober. And 7 days... You know, they gave me a round of applause, these guys. For a year and a half, I've been coming to this meeting and telling them, oh, I did a year sober now. I did a year without drinking. And they, yeah, good. But I'm still smoking dope. You know, I'm still using drugs. And they kind of look at me. But for a week, clean and sober, these guys loved me enough to say, good for you, Paul. Way to go. And it melted my heart. It just, everything was gone. The resentments were gone. The fact that I had to do this my way was all of a sudden gone. It was a first step. Okay? I sat there and for the first time said, I'm an alcoholic and an addict. And I need some help with my life, you guys. I can't do this on my own. I've tried. And from there on, I fell face first into a second step. Because if I can't do it, there better be something that can, you know. Because I can't go around feeling like this, you know. I need to believe in something. So, and I found this part in the Big Book. It's great. Man, it saved my butt. It says, we don't have to believe. We only have to be willing to believe. Now, I had no belief in a higher power at all. I was an atheist. I took great pains in research to find out why there wasn't a God, and I would stand there and argue with you. It was important to me to convince you, or at least to convince myself. There was no God. This was all manufactured for the masses. Karl Marx. This was something that weak people relied on. So I come into this deal, and you tell me I'm going to have to place my life in, you know, and believe in a higher power. Well, I found this part in the Big Book. Just get the willingness, Paul. And that's a start. I had that. I was willing. I wanted it real bad. I didn't know where to go. I didn't know where to look. But I wanted it. So I'm in this second step. And I'm looking everywhere. This part of the open-mindedness thing I believe that I try and hang on to today. And I asked everybody about their higher power. Corner you after the meeting and say, how do you get in touch with your higher power? What does he say to you? And how do you know it's the right thing to do? What's God's will for you today? Just tell me. And I want to know because I got to find this. I got to get something going here. And I was going to all kinds of meetings. I was on fire, you know. I needed this deal bad. Because if I was going to do it, it was going to take a little bit of work. And Columbus only had one meeting a week at the time, so, you know, had to travel a little bit. Besides, we had no sobriety. It was all people who had came in about the time I was forced in. So we all had, there was 9 months and a year and stuff like that. And everybody hanging on to each other for dear life. So we go out to these other meetings and talk to old timers and bring stuff back and share that with the group. And the car trips are, you know, a bigger part of the fellowship than just going to the meetings, you know, as it turns out. Yeah, I had a lot of answers then. Boy, I started going into some service work. Terry, service work is good. It's like, you know, yeah, it teaches us a lot. And I don't even know what the lessons are that I'm getting ready to learn sometimes. But I get out there because I'm told you got to get involved and you got to help and hand this stuff to other people. Give it away. Well, you got to give it away. Don't charge anything for it or you get drunk again, that's for sure, you know. So I was out there in the community. I decided, you know, that we needed some PI work in Columbus, Montana. And I talked with some of the people at the hospital and the sheriff's office and went to the library. Made sure they had a Big Book and just got immersed in this deal, okay? Found a sponsor, started working the steps. I know that that there's been some changes. I don't feel a whole lot different. I still feel immature. I still feel like I got a long way to go. I don't think I know much about life and where I need to be. But people tell me that I've changed. Yeah, that, you know, that they see changes. And this higher power that I knew nothing about to begin with has started to manifest itself in different ways. I didn't have anything but the group to rely on. So people, the group, became my higher power. Here was a bunch of people who definitely had, they were a power greater than myself. It's a simple logical equation. If there's more than one person, it's probably greater power than me, just physically. So here's a group, and they're doing something I can't do, which is to live life without using drugs and alcohol. I didn't lose that completely because my higher power still has skin sometimes. I guess it still shows up that you guys still channel a lot of this stuff as I guess I get some of it and give it away and you guys do the same and I get some instruction when I ask, when I humble myself to ask. But I have found life's lessons to be valuable. I made a lot of mistakes. I still make mistakes, but I find they're not real boring mistakes. And if I'm honest about things, nobody gets hurt. Maybe my pride a little bit, but that I don't hurt people. seems like, and if I do, it's not very serious. I see it right away and I'm able to take care of it. That's nice, because I'm not leaving a war-torn path behind me. I'm not leaving garbage behind me that I need to go back over and take care of a lot now. And people have still, I mean, they're still a big part of my life. And I believe that that has something to do with God working in my life today is through other people. I know that sounds cliche, but for me, it was all I had in the beginning was people. That was the only representative of God in my life was you guys. And I wasn't going to go to the church because I figured they were too indoctrinated that you guys had a lot more open mind about where you were coming from, and God was probably working more in your life than in anybody else's. Today, and in my past, I've had a sponsor who was a Lutheran minister, and I think that was probably one of my best experiences with a sponsor, probably from the standpoint that I didn't go to him with a lot of problems, and I wasn't in early sobriety where I didn't understand the program. My first sponsor was into the Big Book so heavy and into service work, and taught me a lot about what I needed to do to stay sober, and what the program could offer me. But I found that, and I don't think it steps outside the bounds of this deal to say that there's answers as well outside of AA for me. God, as I understand Him, continues to be a growth thing. It's a changing, growing procedure with me to stay in touch with God, and to continually get closer. So this Lutheran minister was able to point me in a couple of directions very simply to examine evil as a possible concept rather than just as a pantheistic one part of the whole. That, you know, and the book that he recommended was excellent. It was called The People of the Lie by Peck, M. Scott Peck. And I was able to finally get a copy of his first work, which is The Road Less Traveled, and I'm reading that now. And I don't mind mentioning this stuff in a meeting of AA, because this is where I'm at today. This is where I'm at with my spiritual growth. Okay, I've had to stay open-minded. I don't want to be closed-minded, but I haven't gotten involved in an organized religion. I've stayed, I don't know, kind of free-floating. I don't know, pinballing around and trying to do more meditating and trying to pray. Meditation is something that I'd like to work more on. I'd like to know more about what that can do in my life. And before I get, you know, too serious and stuff like my personal life, let me tell you a little bit about what it was like to come to Bozeman with 1 year sobriety and find out that things were a whole lot different than my little group of intimate friends that I had in Columbus. I approached this whole deal of going to college full-time and uprooting myself from a very comfortable community. It was a rut, but it was still a very comfortable rut. And this little group of people that started out as my higher power and still had a lot of influence over me, but I felt like it was okay to move. I wasn't running away from anything. I was running towards something. I was pursuing something that was important to me. But gosh, you guys did things different here, you know? I mean, you didn't read any different out of the Big Book, and you still had sponsors, and the steps were the same. But there wasn't this tight home group that I had back in Columbus. I felt really lost, and I went running back, scared a few times, you know, to this little home group in Columbus and said, gosh, I don't know if I can do it. I don't know if I can find sobriety and in AA while in Bozeman. It's just, it's too weird, you know. Weird in that there tended to be kind of a holistic approach to Alcoholics Anonymous here, where, you know, you go to your meetings and you're sort of part of the AA community. Now, I think things have sort of changed as far as structure, group structure. There's been a couple of groups get rather strong here and pursue some things on their own. And I don't really see it as necessary, because you guys taught me that AA works in a whole lot of different ways. Because there were people staying sober here. I stayed sober here. I picked up with a little bunch on Friday nights who ran a beginner's meeting, because I felt I still needed to stay in those first three steps. It was pretty important for me. And I also got contact with a lot of newcomers that way. And it was important for me to keep trying to give this thing away and maybe do some sponsorship. You know, there used to be a fireside meeting here too that I thought was interesting. It used to split up. They'd do the beginning together, and then the smokers would have to leave the room 1 week, and then the next week it was the non-smokers' turn to leave. And I had to go just to find out how that worked. That was interesting. And I met a lot of good people there. I got in touch with the fellowship, which is essentially, I in personal belief, this is an opinion, I believe that's why we go to meetings anyway, is just to get in touch with the people we need that are really going to help us. You know, I don't get a whole lot out of dumping at a meeting. Maybe there's some spiritual principle at work in me sharing, but what I find is that I get in touch with the people who can really help me, and most of this stuff happens outside of the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous for me. It's in my personal life. It's in the relationships that I develop with people in the fellowship. But I'm here in Bozeman, and in 2 years, I love it. I like Bozeman. I like the people. And I find myself getting an opportunity to go overseas, as I mentioned earlier. And that's kind of scary, but it's exciting. It's a neat move. It's something I've never thought of doing. And I didn't know what AA was going to be like, but it's interesting that it was quite the same. You know, they use big books. I happen to be in a country in the Netherlands, in Amsterdam, the capital, that is very much English-speaking. Oh, I hear somebody chuckle. This is the world capital for free drug use, by the way. And, I mean, junkies on the street. And coffee shops that have a menu with little buds of marijuana taped right in there. And chunks of hash taped right down there. And the price that it just goes, really? Is that all? You know? And great beer, I guess. You know, I never did try the beer. A wit beer, a white beer that's kind of cloudy. And a lot of little places that make... There was one of the few windmills still running in the city of Amsterdam has a microbrewery in it. And they make just enough beer for right there. And there's sediment in the bottom of the bottles. And you have to just kind of pour it off and leave a little bit in there. And this all would have been great. You know, had I been kind of a social drinker, I would have been able to enjoy some of this. But I wasn't so much tempted by the drinking there either. What I found is that I didn't get to confront very much of my drug use in recovery. I got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. I found recovery from my use of chemicals in Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I got here, I tried NA a couple times, went to their meetings, and it sort of dissolved right before my eyes. The meetings just... There was no attendance, and a few of them just disappeared. And most people ended up in Alcoholics Anonymous who were recovering from addiction to drugs as well. And I've always felt, since I was also an alcohol user to a great degree, that I qualified for membership in Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't have any problem with that. But when I got to the Netherlands, again, they didn't do things the same way. The Alcoholics Anonymous meetings tended to be, the English-speaking ones, tended to be dumping grounds. And this is a judgment, and this is my opinion, okay? I mean, this is purely opinionated. And I found myself getting testy with all these people. I went to a big book study, and more than once, I think I went like 4 or 5 times, and they were working out of the stories in the back, which I thought was a little odd to begin with, to study the stories in the back. But, you know, they'd read, and then when it was time to talk, they'd be way off over here, because their landlord was doing this and their girlfriend was getting on their back and stuff. And it was just dump, you know, everything right at the meeting, and this was supposed to be therapy or something. And it just wasn't working for me, okay? I met some good people, and they told me about other meetings, and I checked this stuff out. And I ended up in another beginner's meeting for the year that I was over there as a faithful attendee. But it was a meeting of Narcotics Anonymous. And all the same people who were at this little meeting of Narcotics Anonymous also went to Alcoholics Anonymous there. But there I found some real basis in that we stayed on the first 3 steps again. I like that. I find that's really important for my recovery, as I don't get too far from that, at least so far. And hopefully that's not keeping me from doing the other things, although I find I procrastinate on amends quite often. But I found this little group, and you know, the major difference... And this is kind of interesting. I'll just throw this out. Is, you know, I pay a lot of attention to detail. when they, and the book is quite similar. I've read the book a couple times, Narcotics Anonymous, and it's a lot along the same guidelines as we use in Alcoholics Anonymous. But when they go to read the steps, and they get to that 12th step, they've actually changed a word in that step. In their literature, it says, as a result of these, as a result of a spiritual, as a result of these, had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. Instead of the result, it's a result. Like there's other results. Now we say the result. Like you're not going to get anything else, guys. You get a spiritual awakening here and that's it. But in Narcotics Anonymous, for some reason they changed one word in there and I guess you get more. I don't know. But I, you know, all I'm after is spiritual education, spiritual awakening here. You know, because I don't go to church. I don't read the Bible. I talk with good people. I tend to gravitate towards good people the way I used to seek out and gravitate towards people that I was going to go get high with my first day on the job. Like you just used to be able to pick them people out, you know. Who was going to be in the bar after work? Who was going to roll a joint at lunch? You just knew it. And you just hung out with them. You just... Now it's sort of, you know, it's I don't know what happened, but now I'm gravitating towards good people who tend to be on a spiritual path, whether it's in a 12-step program or they just got it, you know, where I didn't. You know, they seem to catch on and they got something. And I like to talk about that stuff. I like to go after that with people. And when I come to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, I try and share exactly what happened to me. Now, this came up at a meeting yesterday. That, you know, I could sit here and worry. I could have written notes for this meeting tonight, you know, to help myself along and have some theme, or like I said, work right on the steps. But out of the chapter, working with others, in our book, they got read at a meeting yesterday, and I remember. You know, the main thing I got out of that chapter, and it came up in this reading, was tell exactly what happened to you. Tell your prospect exactly what happened to you. Don't be afraid to talk about spiritual principles, and just be honest. And that's it. It doesn't say, you know, get them to their first meeting. It doesn't say, tell them what you think. It doesn't say to jam this thing down their throat. Tell them your story is what it says, you know. And I try and be as honest as I can with that. And I'll do a little confession here, and I hope this doesn't sound like dumping, but I've been having a little trouble with honesty lately. I've caught myself in a few white lies lately, and I've got to look at that as being a real danger sign. You know, I think that it's real dangerous for me to get away with saying, no, I really don't want to go out. I'm going to go back home and I've got to see somebody, when it's not true, you know. And just getting right down to basics, guys, you know. I mean, today, what I need to do is continue to honesty, open-mindedness, and find the willingness to do this stuff that I don't want to do. It's just like that. It hasn't changed a whole lot. You know, I don't get revelations and I don't get inspired maybe the way I used to, because all this stuff isn't brand new to me anymore. But I'll tell you something, what I have found is that there's a real adventure to life if you're just willing to keep looking. You know, that if someone who didn't believe in God insisted that there was no God, can find strength through God to make the changes in his life that I've made, then it's got to be something worth looking into. You know what I mean? It's like, you guys don't know me from before, but I hope I've been able to draw you a little mental picture of the guy that used to, you know, party till he puked and then go back in there and drink some more. That was a great one for that. You know, and I mean, phony. Yeah, I mentioned that word once, but boy, I think that really sums me up. I wanted to be somebody, hey, you know. I wanted to be this loner kind of guy, you know. Lone wolf kind of guy. And what I found is that the real strength in life comes from not doing it on my own, but in pulling you guys close to me, pulling people into my life, and getting as close as I can to God's world, which says a lot. I mean, there's so much going on in my life right now that's unresolved that it would be real easy for me to panic. And at times I find the fear that's underlying some of the motivation when I'm doing self-will. And I've had to do a lot of that. I mean, I'm human, and I'm an alcoholic. And when I can uncover some of the fears at work, and get right back to that big book and say, well, yeah, it all keys in on this dependence on God. And if I'm fearful, it's because I don't have faith. You know, that I'm taking things really serious again, because things aren't working out just the way I want, and that it's not going to be okay. When it is going to be okay, you know, that my death will be okay. You know, I'd love to come to that point. You know, and with the things in my life today that I consider serious, I'm thankful to have what I've got. I'm thankful to have had the experiences that I've had over the years. You know, I'm thankful to have friends that stay in touch, that closeness, you know, even when I'm traveling around and getting far away. I'm thankful to have a relationship with a God of my understanding that can help me deal with stuff so I don't have to use. Pretty much what it comes down to. And I can't say a whole lot more than that, you know. That's what this thing has given me. And somehow, you know, over the years, it hasn't changed a whole lot. Because today it's still pretty much the same thing. God gives me that strength to stand here today and tell you that I'm an alcoholic. And that's okay. Everything's okay. Yeah. I'm going to start chasing rabbits here pretty soon. I've gone on for my allotted time. It's really good to see you guys again. It really is. Thanks a lot.